afternoon, sir.
Chairperson Buthelezi, can you switch on your mic? I've muted everyone else.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, Honorable Maswangani.
Where is Honorable Karim? I can see Honorable Buthelezi is there. And where is Honorable Hlengwa and Mahlangu?
Honorable Hlengwa was experiencing connection problem. IT is busy with him. Honorable Karim is already here, Chair.
I'm unmuted there. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, Chair.
Thank you so much. I have the presentation in front of me, as it were.
Yes.
By National Treasurer. Okay. Good afternoon, Joe.
Afternoon, Chair.
Hey, how are you?
Fine. Can you chair the meeting, sir?
No, we are already chairing. Continue. How well?
If you now chair this meeting.
Continue.
The traditional leader.
from the north, eh?
No, from Emasabatini.
No, continue, Joe.
Eunice, where are you?
Sangwa is present. I was having difficulties, but I sorted them out. No problem. I'm here.
Okay, you're welcome, Sangwa. And where's Comrade Eunice Karim?
I'm here, Comrade Joe. I'm very much here. I got here at 12:32. Okay.
Honorable Sangwa, good afternoon. Buthelezi here.
Honorable Sangwa, where are you?
I have been Honorable Tangu, Chairperson, but I will give you a call now.
Okay, try to assist. So it's Treasury Relief.
Yes, I've seen Chairperson representative from Treasury. I've put on screen the agenda of today, Chair.
Who will be briefing us, Treasury?
Good afternoon, honourable members, and this is Dondo. I'm online.
Good afternoon, TG.
Good afternoon, Chair.
Mm-hmm. How are you? Welcome.
No, I'm fine under these circumstances.
Chair, just so that you know, SARS is also online. This is Edward Kieswetter.
Chair, just to let you know that Sheikh Imam, I'm on board.
Are we not getting honorable, madam? Because we have to start. I'm told there is another meeting at 3.
Yeah, I think let's start, Chair. She'll get us on the way.
Okay.
Chair, I'm also here, but there's a bit of pressure for other meetings, but we'll try and prioritize this one. This is the minister here. And but I think Dondo will do the presentation, and if needs be, I'll come on, but I think he's going to do most. I think Mampo in here, Dondo, as well?
Yes, everyone is here. Edgar, Tepiso, Mampo, everyone is here.
Okay, what we'll do the opening welcome, apologies, request the minister to make a political opening statement.
Okay.
Can we start? Welcome, everybody. Let me take this opportunity to welcome my colleagues, Honorable Buthelezi Shenge, Honorable Mahlangu, Honorable Eunice Karim, Honorable Chairperson Dengwa. Welcome all members of standing and select committees of both houses, NA and NCO. This is a meeting to get a briefing from the minister and his team about the financial implications of COVID-19 on the economy and the budget. You are all welcome, and the meeting is officially open. Let's move to the question. Apologies. Ululeko, Allen, and other secretaries, do we have apologies?
It's Nkululeko on this side, Chair. The only apology we have is from Honorable Mkiva. He might join us later on as he's experiencing connection problem. That's the only apology I have on my side, Chair.
Okay. Alan, any apology?
Chair from Standing Committee on Finance, none.
I also didn't receive anything, Chair, from the Standing Committee on Finance.
Good afternoon, Co-Chairperson. No apologies from Standing Committee on Appropriations. It's just Ms. Tikhala is still struggling with connectivity, but she will join. Thank you.
And still it.
Chairperson, Khulekwe Hlengwe here. Just two apologies from Scopus. The Honorable Mahau and the Honorable Lise is having connection problems. He will join the meeting shortly.
Hi, Chairperson Maswanganya. Chairperson Buthelezi, we seem to have lost Chairperson Maswanganya. Unmute your mic, Chairperson Buthelezi.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you.
Good afternoon, honorable members. I can see Honorable Maswanganya is trying to connect. He's calling on the other side. But I think let's proceed with the agenda. As Honorable Maswanganya has said, we'll request the Minister of Finance to give an opening, and then he will then proceed with his team. Honorable Minister of Finance.
Good afternoon, colleagues. I think that we're all aware that we face a tremendous challenge with respect to the coronavirus and its impact on the economy and the finances. And as you know, before the crisis hit, we were already under severe stress on the economy, and the advent of the coronavirus has made the situation more severe. And as you know, they have been various revisions to the growth forecast, both at the global level, the continental level, but more importantly, domestically here in South Africa, which the Treasury team will go through. But needless to say that the in 2020, we see a very sharp downturn in the economy according to various forecasts, and the sharp downturn has the potential to have a sharp upturn, almost in a V-shape like fashion, if we do things quite correctly. And that's a challenge that we have, how to do things correctly. Inflation, as they will indicate, remains fairly low. But I think for the purpose of this meeting is the fact that the lockdown has basically brought economic activity standstill. And that, by its very nature, means that we have not been in a position to collect any revenue during this process, and yet the pressure on the expenditure side has been there, and so this poses very serious problems for us. And one of the difficult psychological issues that I have is that when we announce, for example, say the 500 billion rand interventions, there are people who think that there's 500 billion rand in the bank that is there already, it must just be spent, which is far from the truth. These are interventions that depend as well on, you know, the inflow of revenue directed, as we mentioned, the National Credit Guarantee Scheme that has been activated now, I think, as of yesterday, and other interventions, various programs to borrow from international organizations where we can find favorable interest rates or no interest rates at all, which is very difficult to find. And one of the issues is, for example, at the IMF window, the lower income countries can approach the IMF at 0%. And we are a middle income country, and by yesterday it's becoming clear that we don't qualify for a 0% interest rate. So we have to keep looking around and see where we can find favorable terms. So all in all, I think for our purpose, I suppose, Mr. Chairman, Honorable Chair, is that we have to appeal to Parliament to pass the appropriation bill as presented in Parliament, with the full understanding that we will need to prepare a supplementary budget to present, which has to consolidate all these expenditure levels we need to do. As it is, Dondo, myself, the team are reeling under pressure as to what we need to do for the land bank. And although we're not in a position to discuss that today, but it's an issue that is facing us in the eye, as it were. So we under tremendous pressure, a lot of expenditure requirements, no tax revenues. You'll see when the officials present on the tax position that we're really in a very serious bind. We have to find a way to contain expenditure whilst not inhibiting the growth enhancing parts of the economy as soon as the lockdown is out. I think, Dondo, as you make the presentation, I think you do it on the basis that this is an open forum, so let's don't say anything that might sound confidential, secret, because the other committees is that when we appear before a committee of parliament, I mean, that's a public platform. It's not confidential platform. So we proceed on understanding that this is a public platform to avoid any complications into the future. Honorable Chair, I think that's all I can say for now, but thank you very much again for affording us the opportunity to exchange ideas with you. Our voices are going to sound a little bit different to the usual because we've been in too many meetings and it's been a lot of talking. So we come to you with the hoarse voices, but hopefully you can hear us. Nevertheless, thank you very much indeed. I hand over to you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you so much, Minister. Please indicate who is going to talk in your team, Director General.
DG, I think it's DG is going to talk, but there's a number of them, I think, but DG is going to be indicating who is going to speak at what point. But I think he's going to start, yeah. and then you indicate who else comes in the choreography which they have organized. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Minister. Thank you very much, Chair. And good afternoon to honourable members, and thank you very much for inviting us and have the opportunity to present this to you. I must just indicate, Chair, that over and above the slides that are in front of us, we also send honourable members, and we also release this document that is a bit detailed in terms of some of the narrative around this. So it is available everywhere. It's available on the website. So I will start with slide, Minister indicated, just make some preliminary remarks. Let me start with slide number 4, just to characterize this environment and the situation where we are at this point in time, in terms of South African economic performance today. That's slide number 4. We tried in this slide to show honorable members how we have viewed South Africa from the 1960s. And the challenges that we are in, including the impact lately in 2008-2009 that we are all familiar with, which was the global financial crisis. And we also thought this was the worst area for post-94 environment. But you can clearly see that the COVID-19 pandemic is more severe than any other, in the last 60 years, COVID-19 will hit the worst in terms of our economy. And you can see there where the prediction is minus 6.4%. What then in slide number 5 are drivers of the declining growth trend? And what are the structural faults that are some of them obvious, we know about them. And we just want to bring them so that we put in context what we're going to be talking about. Firstly, poor educational outcomes that perpetuate inherent disadvantage, low levels of labor-intensive growth, the economy, as we know, skills constraint, partial fragmentation of the urban landscape and travel costs, highly concentrated industrial structures that limit competition and high barriers to entry. We've got a lot of inefficient monopolies that impose a very high cost structure on the network infrastructure that we have, low swings in commodity prices, and it's worse now in the downgrade phase that we find ourselves in now. There's a collapse in consumer and business evidence, demonstrating a clear contraction in private investment and consumption. And we're saying there that the current contraction is defined by the interaction of all of these elements
that impose a very high cost structure on the network infrastructure that we have, low swings in commodity prices, and it's worse now in the downgrade phase.
Okay, are we crossing lines? I don't know.
Downgrade phase that we are set in now.
Hello, Honorable. Teach you just a second.
Private investment and consumption. And we're saying that the current conjuncture is defined by the
I think there's someone recording. What I suggest, Chair, can we request that everyone mutes their phones or their devices?
Honourable members, please mute your devices, please. There's interference with the presentation by the Director General. Please. Okay, thank continue, DG.
Going to slide number 6, we say then there are much needed reforms and they remain relevant now and in the future around the telecoms, around transport, around tourism, where we need to, in the telecom space, ensure that we finalize the digital migration, finalize the spectrum release, and leverage the private sector for broadband to reduce cost of doing business. We've been saying this. And some as listed in the transport and tourism space. These are some of the things we said previously. They still remain relevant. Including agricultural interventions and dealing with some of the barriers to entry that are listed in slide number 7. Now, the shock that we are in currently is not only a health crisis. Obviously, that's yet there's also the domestic economy as we know it now that has stopped. It's also a global economy that has stopped because there's no trade, there's no interaction, there's nothing out there, as you know. And also, there is a slow systemic collapse in accessing capital markets. And you will see that as we demonstrate later the cost of borrowing. We are thinking dealing with the health shock. We think it's important that the health of South African comes first. And I think that's what we saw now in terms of the president's various briefings to the nation and how serious this health shock has been attended to. And I think it's something that we should continue doing that in a way that we don't have to take it lightly. Secondly, we have the view that an early lockdown was the right decision, but obviously it has got serious domestic economic implications. And therefore, we need some measures in the short and medium and long term to deal with the supply shock that obviously our economy is experiencing. There's also a demand shock. The collapse in the global economy reduces foreign income and exports. And tourism, as you know now, is affected as the tourism sector is completely dead as we speak. We should then focus our economic, we should focus our response to affected industries as we think beyond COVID-19. And also the point I made that the global financial system obviously has, it's on its knees almost, where we have seen record outflows from South Africa and peer countries like ours. And we therefore need to come up with other measures to support capital markets. And I think it's important, again, in terms of a comprehensive response, whether from a fiscal policy point of view, monetary policy point of view, we have to take into account that all of these shocks, one way or the other, have to be dealt with. There are various channels in slide number 9 that South Africa will be affected by this COVID-19. We've seen rising liquidations, and they're going to come through. We have seen increased risk of workers put on short-term or retrenchment due to lack of demand. Many restaurants are already closed down. Many plaza shops have already closed down. Everything is almost coming to a standstill in terms of the impact that COVID-19 has. There's disruptions in the global supply chains. There's changes to consumer spending. We've seen that. Rising expenditure on medical services and lower spend on durables and semi-durables.
How serious?
And this is a trend that's been with us for a while. The slowing consumer spending due to lockdowns, substantial disruptions to international travel, and this market sentiment compared to a slow economy recovery. And obviously, with the new oil war that you saw, where at some point a barrel of oil was almost nothing in the last week or so. There is definitely potential impact in the South African economy. Slide number 10. Whether you're looking at it from a business point of view, from labor or government, including the poor, and that clearly something had to be done. In the short term, we'll see some retrenchments, especially this is going to impact more on low and medium skills and those in informal settlement, I mean informal employment. There's obviously falling demand for durables, as I said, personal services, retail, recreation and restaurants, business lost production due to sick leave and quarantines, public transport losses. There are no taxis running frequently, as we understand, as we know, as we've seen, trains are not running, including buses. So, again, there's impact on the business. The public health system is at full capacity now in terms of trying to address the challenges coming from the COVID-19. And we expect that this definitely will lead to higher mortality rates that will be exacerbated by underlying disease. Again, the poor are going to find it very, very difficult to recover from the outbreak due to low accumulated savings, and also the impact of what essentially is going to be funeral costs if there's loss of life later on, and including loss of breadwinner income. Now, coming to government, we will begin to see our public finances becoming unsustainable in terms of what we have to address and resources that we have to be made available. We'll have to see some reprioritizing towards health, and we'll also have to see some spending being reduced in some of the priority areas. That's why the minister was saying it's important that as is, to then request with understanding that can happen as soon as possible, that the appropriation bills are passed so that we can immediately start putting a revised budget together that takes into account some of the issues that we have experienced to date and some of the reprioritizations that are necessary and with some of the interventions. Now, slide 11 is very important because it's also talking about, okay, if we had time overnight, we would have increased included this the latest S&P downgrade in this slide. We didn't take that into account, as you know, it happened overnight. So again, you can see where we are at with various rating agencies, and clearly, the reasons are outlined. But the next slide is more important, which is slide number 12. What are our rating strengths? Everyone is saying, we've got an independent monetary policy, which is a plus for us, well-capitalized banking sector, flexible exchange rates. We rely, our reliance is very low on foreign currency funding. We've got deep local markets. We've got the sustained strength of core institutions such as the judiciary and the reserve bank. We've got strong and transparent macroeconomic policy institutions. And we've got a favorable government debt structure. And that obviously one expects that may change. But what
DG?
Are the
weaknesses? DG?
Hello?
Just a second. Yes, I'm on here. I'm in a different slide from one that you are talking to. The slide that I'm on is much needed reforms which remain relevant. Can we go with the DG as far as the slides are concerned, please?
Yes, Chair. Someone took control of the slides. I'm not too sure. I thought it was from DG's office. Can I request that people leave the slide as they are in control of the slides, Chair?
Okay, DG, can you then go to slide number 12, please?
Is it on slide 12 now, Chair?
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Yes.
That's fine.
I've got someone who helped me with slides. I'm on 12 now.
DG?
Hello, sir.
Yeah. Just leave the controller to deal with the slides, eh?
Yes.
So yeah, from the controller, not from your side.
Thank you very much.
So thank you.
Rating weaknesses, low per capita income, we don't save as a nation. Low investment rate, low GDP growth rates, deteriorating government finances, and that is demonstrated now. Social and political divisions that hamper reform progress, generate policy uncertainty. These are things that rating agencies say about ourselves, by the way. It's not even our own rating here. Structural economic bottlenecks that limit growth potential and employment, the weak balance sheet of state-owned companies and its impact, rising contingent liabilities and defaults, rising social tensions due to extremely high inequality. And there are certain things that we, if we do properly, we can, they can lead to us to upgrading and stable outlook, which is formulation of a clear and credible path to stabilizing the government debt GDP ratio over the medium term. And if we have to just do what we commit to ourselves, which is implementing some of the reforms that we say are critical, and if we do those, we will be fine. If we reduce SOC guarantee exposure, and finally, if there's substantial improvement in the economic growth outlook, and something that we have to focus on, what could lead to further downgrade? And you saw S&P acted last night, failure to stabilize debt to GDP over the medium term. I mean, clearly, when we say we are going to borrow more to address some of our challenges, that on its own changes the debt to GDP ratio. We have not been implementing reforms as government that we said we should. There's a deterioration of our GDP growth. Debt is rising, and there's increased vulnerability from the current account and external deficit and external financing needs. I'm now going to slide number 13. And then in slide number 13, basically showing you the impact around various sectors. And again, where the severe decline because of where we are at, because of the downgrade and COVID crisis, you can see essentially the alcoholic beverages and tobacco industry will be severely impacted. And there may even be huge decline. The wood and food products, tires and rubber products, construction, accommodation, catering. And again, you can look at the percentage decline in others. So basically, we're trying to show the committee around the impact that COVID-19 and the downgrades have on us. Same information depicted differently here in terms of the contribution by different sectors and the impact thereof. You can see construction is likely, going to experience that, say, it will be hit more compared to the others, including, manufacturing, including finance, real estate, and business services indicated there. So again, that's straightforward. I'm not going to go down, explain more than that.
Chair? It's honorable Hadebe, upon you being in charge of the slides, it has disappeared on our screens. I'm not sure whether I'm the only one who can't see the slides.
Can you please get back the slides? I had just written to them saying that I don't see the slides again. So can you please have the slides again?
Yes.
Thanks, honorable Hadebe.
Thank you.
Yes, Chair. Someone keeps on taking the slides from me, Chair. It's gone again. I'm not too sure it's by mistake or what.
So it can only be between yourself and National Treasury, is it not so?
We have the subcommittee sending the slides presentation to the emails of members.
Come again?
Can't we have members receiving the slides in the from their gadgets instead of having to have it here, because this is going to just delay us unnecessarily.
Okay, DG? DG?
DG?
Yeah, can you send the slides to the secretaries of the committees so that they can send the slides to the honorable members? Eh?
Chair? Send the slides to
honorable Chair?
Yes.
Honourable Chair, it's Dike Dedi.
Yes.
We have received the slides, Chair. We can use both. We have received the slides. Thank you.
Okay. Check your inboxes, honourable members. But again, from the DG's side and the controller there, please can you make sure that only one person controls the slides?
Yes, okay. Chair, we should do that. I'm now going quickly again with the impact of the downgrade. Slide 16 spells out.
One slide 16.
Yeah, same information, but showed differently in terms of the impact of the to various sectors, and what exactly that has. Slide number 17 shows economic impact and crisis on tax revenues. If you look at all the scenarios, there's clearly going to be huge impact currently, and I'll go back to this later on in the presentation. In terms of how we view this thing, slide number 18, of getting quickly out of COVID-19 crisis and downgrade, we think if there's a quick containment, the economy can bounce back quickly. If a pandemic really takes longer to contain,
hello,
the economy is going to be slower.
Is it on the
yep.
It's Bradley calling on behalf of Parliament IT.
Bradley, I'm connected now. The email, I still haven't connected on my laptop, but I've managed to connect on my iPad.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Lee, for muting the phone on the Conrad gadget. Thank you. The pandemic, if the pandemic endures longer and the recovery after it spread over a longer period than in a slow scenario, then obviously we're going to see the economic impact, continuing and to really impact on many, many sectors. So again, we are characterizing these challenges and understanding, and we did a whole lot of modeling around all of the same areas and understanding where we are at in order for us to come up with measures that are directed and measures that can really make interventions to actually impact on what we are trying to do, which is addressing the impact on the poor, and also trying to see what quick fixes we can put in place for the economy to recover. Slide 20 simply just put to the committee about what different scenarios mean in terms of GDP growth. If it's quick, the impact is going to be shorter, and if it's slow, and if it's longer, the impact is going to be huge. So again, we've done those calculations, trying to suggest to the committee that we have to understand the characterization of the challenges that we're in. Slide number 21 explains the same in terms of looking at employment. Again, looking at it in terms of quickly and slower and longer. If you look at construction, for instance. Construction, we know, is highly impacted. Manufacturing is highly impacted. And if the situation is going to be longer, the percentage change, again, is going to increase by just looking at the graph on the right, slide number 21. So, again, this is clear. I don't go into detail on this. Same as slide 22 and slide 23, slide 24. Now, Chair, the overview, which is the slide 27, I think, let's characterize where we are at. After analyzing the economy and the challenges, the impact in various sectors, what then do we do? Analysis here is that the pandemic obviously has got far-reaching global economic impact. And secondly, that if we don't prioritize health for South Africans, we're going to be found wanting. The immediate priority, therefore, is to support economic activity in the long term and plan for it, which is important, and also make sure that we alleviate hardship. Second bullet there, we have adopted a risk-adjusted approach for reopening the economy in a way that we did, with the initial easing of lockdown measures as of May, 1st of May, and what's needed over the next 18 months in order for us to address the health crisis and resolve the challenges that we're in. In characterizing the challenges that we're in, government has put together a package of about 500 billion. We're saying the total size of the package is estimated at around a trillion. Why do we say a trillion? Not necessarily a trillion, but if you count every intervention, whether you're looking at the monetary and financial market interventions, or whether you are looking at the interventions that you have to make that obviously come to any amount, almost to a trillion, 800 to a trillion. So it's important that we understand that context. But in the next few months, we have to do a special adjustment that will set all of these proposals in proper perspective and for committees in Parliament and Parliament as a whole to interact with. And the whole idea would be to wanting to stabilize public finances. Over the longer term, we cannot only merely return the economy to where it was before the pandemic. It's going to be difficult. And it's not going to, it's going to be long, it's going to be tough, and it's not going to be easy. We therefore have to forge a new economy in a new global reality. And this will require a new, a new social compact between business, community, labor, and government. And we have to implement far-reaching reforms to enable millions of South Africans to participate in building a more productive and prosperous society. And we have to step up our efforts to promote industrialization and also overhaul our state-owned companies. As we all know that most of them, if not all, are in severe financial situation. They're in trouble, actually, most of them. So it's important that as we get into the rest of this presentation, understand that the challenge is going to be how do we do that and how quick do we do that and what kind of a social contract and compact do we have to agree, a new one, which actually we have to redefine the new way of doing business, etc. I am now going to slide number 28. And slide number 28 basically compares ourselves with other G20 countries and what they did in terms of trying to support their own economies as a result of the impact of COVID. In our case, it's COVID and downgrade, as I said. In our 500 billion, we are combining the revenue and expenditure measures, including a loan guarantee, and I'll talk to that later. And all of this comes to about 10% of GDP, which is just above some of the countries that we see there. So again, this is just for illustrative purposes in terms of what we have to do. There are some short-term interventions that are critical that inform our approach as government in terms of supporting the economy and supporting the poor. Firstly and foremost of importance was to support healthcare. And as a result, you'll see healthcare spending increases across the board. And we'll obviously include more support to mass testing and tracing. And we also started by making sure that we streamline and fast-track the procurement on the procurement front, so that we can deal with the support that's needed in the health sector. Secondly, we thought it's important that we relieve hunger and distress that may normally would not have been there at this level, because we have seen that increasing manifold. So we expanded the grants, top up. We have also ensured that we extend the social relief of distress to target many people, and we'll talk to that later. And we also wanted to support companies that may be in distress, and that's where the scheme of 200 billion comes in, where we support employment relief schemes. There are some tax deferrals that we actually and postpone some major taxes, including carbon tax, by a couple of months, and the loan guarantee to firms. And the loan guarantees to them to ensure that firms don't close and also ensure that jobs are not lost in the process. As another measure, we thought it's important to spell out phases in opening up the economy after lockdown, and where we have to take appropriate steps that takes into account health and economic considerations and supporting what may be structural constraints moving forward. We've also seen the Reserve Bank, making some interventions in ensuring that there are repo rate reductions. Also in ensuring that there's some regulatory measures that are obviously changed, including financial sector support and among many a measure that the bank advanced in a way where, again, we are easing the cost of business and the cost of that communities and society as a whole will incur. This slide describes the global economic environment, and I'm not going to spend too much on it, which is slide 30. Slide 31 basically characterizes how then, with all of this, do we see our own economic outlook. And those are some of the factors that we characterize our challenge and see ourselves where we are at. And again, I did speak to most of these points, and I'm not going to repeat those. A coordinated, in slide number 32, a coordinated three-phased approach to support employment investment is needed. And we kind of said it's important that we see ourselves in the first phase, which is up to the next 6 months, where we're preserving what we have, at least so that we don't collapse to a point where it's going to be almost difficult to actually turn around. And this is all, by the way, based on how long do we contain the virus, or how long do we ensure that the infections do not increase. Health spend increases materially to contain pandemic. We are doing that. We're supporting households. We are providing fiscal support and allow the deficit to rise as economic activity declines. As I said, we are facing down, being faced conclusion of lockdown and some interventions. Now, in the next 6 to 12 months, we have to continue with it, and we are going to continue with some health responses. And we have to shift our economy to supporting employment and invest to bolster recovery as the restrictions on domestic activity will ease and global growth returns. And implement significant, underline that, significant fiscal reprioritization and necessary. And obviously in the next year to 18 months, we have to position our economy to structural high growth. Now, this obviously will change where maybe the preservation of what we want to do can come much earlier, can be extended beyond, and the recovery may take longer. But this is ideally what we would have preferred, that we preserve what we have, ensure that we recover from the impact that we face, and then really position ourselves to ensuring that we actually make the economy to grow higher. We did mention what is then the package of 500 interventions. This is slide number 33. And again, it's a slide that we have put together to ensure that we kind of understand what are we talking about here. The president announced some of these measures where there's a credit guarantee scheme of 200 billion. Basically, here saying we are guaranteeing banks, South African banks, to actually advance very cheap loans, call it that for now, to banks in order for them to continue businesses to operate. Secondly, we are putting aside interventions worth 100 billion that will support creation, that will support SMEs and informal business to thrive in this environment. There are also measures that we actually introduced, mainly as a result of tax measures that we introduced, that ensures again that businesses are kept running for people to be. It's all about the people here and ensuring that as much as businesses thrive, we're able to have production lines continuing and also get people employed and to keep the livelihoods of South Africans intact. Putting aside 50 billion rand support over and above what we're spending on grants. Next, I think we're spending next is 120 billion or so in social grants. So this is over and above. And again, simply we're saying we're supporting, chopping up child support grants and other grant types. And we're also making some interventions on the unemployed and the most vulnerable. There's also wage protection measures of about 40 billion, including two critical areas. And we are in discussion in terms of how and what exactly is this going to be like. Where we're saying health will need more and frontline services, 20 billion rand. and support to municipalities. Now, support to municipalities, in our discussions with the premiers a few weeks ago with the PCC level, it was very clear that premiers were highlighting the importance of recognizing that some municipalities will be affected in a big way, where rates and taxes are going to be paid because people are out of jobs, and as a result, it's going to be difficult. So, by just noting and recognizing that you have to think about municipalities and the impact. So, obviously, we will be watching that very close in terms of the spending areas of all of these spending items that obviously, where's the money going to come from? We're saying the guarantee scheme is self-explanatory. There we are increasing our contingent liabilities by 200 billion. Our wish is to ensure that we reprioritize provincial budgets and national budgets by about 130 billion. 100 billion from national departments and 30 from provinces. To committees, I must hasten to say that this area is not the easiest of them all to do. As we can imagine, some budgets have been fixed, some contracts have been entered into. So this is going to be very, very difficult. But we will attempt to actually make sure that we reprioritize. We all know that currently we are in Pretoria. That means there's some saving to the airline tickets that I was supposed to buy and the accommodation in Cape Town, etc. If one doesn't have accommodation in Cape Town. There are some advertising budgets which obviously will revise down. Some consultancy budgets will revise down. It's not going to be enough, but we have to obviously look into ensuring that we delay implementation of some of the key big projects. And this we will expect for these kind of what exactly we are delaying to come through in the revised budget or supplementary budget that Minister was talking about. So it's important that we approach this very carefully, because we have to, and departments are being told this, it cannot be business as usual. COVID is here, and it's coupled with repositioning the South African economy. So again, spending is going to have to be reprioritized in a big way. So part of funding this package will come from internal resources. We will, over and above the numbers that we have, as per the budget 2019, we'll have to increase our borrowings to multilateral finance institutions and development banks and business support. So all of that is about 95 billion. Let me break it down so that transparency prevails all along. 4.2 billion rand will come through from the IMF. If we have to successfully discuss, we'll get 4.2 billion. Now, this was after the IMF, which was one of the Inter-Monetary Finance Committee that we are part of in the IMFC at the spring meetings last 2 weeks ago, or 10 days ago, that the IMF agreed and came up with this package of support, or various packages of support that are COVID-19 related. So then they made this package available to countries like ours, as Minister said. The facility that is available to us is called Rapid Financing Instrument. It's a facility that attracts some interest of 3.1%. There are also facilities that attract other zero interest extended credit financing facilities for low income countries. Those facilities attract 0%. Secondly, it's the New Development Bank, 1 billion rand. And thirdly, it's the World Bank. They made a provision for South Africa of $50 million. Insofar as health is concerned. Now, when you add that and you convert all of that in terms of today's exchange rate, you'll come to about 95 billion rand. Again, there will be some additional transfers from social security funds, in particular the UIF of 60 billion, and there's some 50 billion from available funds in the Department of Social Development 2021 appropriation. This came obviously after we decided as a quick intervention in the last 2 days of the last financial year to bring the spending that would have been accounted for in 2021 and bring it forward to 2019-20 as a result, increasing the overspending for 1920 financial year, which in a different process will come to the Appropriations Committee to explain ourselves for that. So, but for the purpose of this conversation, I'm just, you know, pulling together all the resources that makes up the 500 billion. We've done that, and the next slide, Chair, explains exactly that, what I said earlier on, in terms of you know, funding from multilateral development banks and including the IMF. There are some risks, obviously, because every country, many countries are competing for this. If you go to, Chair, we don't have that list here, but if one has to do a basic desktop research, you see that many countries in the world have approached both the World Bank and the IMF and the NDB, and not NDB because it's only for these five countries, including African Development Bank, for support one way or the other because of the impact of COVID. In our case, we obviously, you know, we've approached, and there will obviously be general covenants and agreements, and then that, and we need to interrogate that at the later stage. Chair, there are some tax policy measures, and I'm going to ask Momonia to talk to these. And in slide number, if colleagues can prepare themselves, Momonia will speak to slide number 36, and you will, you know, and Sepiso can speak to slide number 38, and then I will then ask Mary Jane to speak to slide number 40. And Momo then will come back to from slide 41 again. So let's start with Momo, Minister and Chair, with your permission, for Momo just to talk to slide number 36.
DG?
Okay. DG?
DG? Oh. DG? Yes,
sir, I'm with
you. You have got 15 minutes to finish everything so that you know that we have got a deadline of 3 o'clock. So, honourable members would still like to interact with you. So, can we please and try and fast track that? Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Chair and DG. So, just on the slide, you see the tax measures. What we've done is we published two rounds of COVID-19 tax measures. And I'll just give you the overall approach. So we took the employment tax, and the approach has been to take some liquidity measures through deferrals. So where a company is supposed to pay some of its tax liabilities, or like when it deducts PAYE, it's able to then actually keep some of that money to use it to hopefully pay salaries and its suppliers and so on. We've also taken measures. Some of them are impact on revenue, as you can see from the slide. So we've taken the employment tax incentive, and we've increased it again to pay up to 750 rand to all employees with an income below 6,500 rands. Remember that in normal times, it's only between 18 to 29 years. It's now extended to all ages who fall within that salary bracket. We've allowed deferral again of 35% of PAYE. Again, we're doing this for 4 months. A company can hold that, those deductions, 35% of it. We've also given a 4-month contribution holiday for the skills development levy. We've allowed a deferral for excise duty on alcohol and tobacco. These companies face these excise duties up front before sales. And given that there's no sales, we can't really expect excise duty to be paid at this point. We've also allowed a 3-month deferral for the first payment on the carbon tax, which will be now in September. And then we've also allowed for case-by-case deferrals, because many of these measures apply to small businesses with a certain turnover, but where there are such limits, we do get companies to talk to SARS directly on a case-by-case basis. Underlying these measures is the fact that we want to retain the productive capacity of the economy. We want to make sure that companies go insolvent or have liquidity problems and cannot make payments for salaries. So that's been the measure that we've done. Bear in mind that the tax system works on an annual basis. So some of those funds will be paid later, and we've allowed for a kind of reasonable basis for such payment. And what we've done is, like all tax measures, we've published a disaster management tax money bill and administration bills, and these will incorporate these changes. And we did a presentation to the Standing Committee on Finance last week on some of those proposals. We do have to update the bills, but on the Treasury website, you can get much more detail, both on the presentation we made and on an explanatory note to provide further information to taxpayers. If you look at, and just to end off, you can see the totals then. The 70 billion ban in measures is comprised of 44 billion, which are liquidity measures, which is in effect like an interest-free loan from the state. And the revenue impact of some of the proposals are spelled out, totaling 26 billion, giving you a total of 70 billion. Gigi, I'm done.
Can you also talk to the loan guarantee for the credit scheme, please?
Roy, do you
want to
come in?
Is Roy in? I'm not sure.
He is here.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Roy?
Kim, which I think is a very important way of supporting small and medium enterprises. It will make available 200 billion in new loans. It will be applicable for businesses of annual turnover of less than 300 million, which are in good standing with commercial banks. You can borrow it for loans. It's one loan, we offer it. Importantly, there is a 6-month repayment holiday from the drawdown, although it will accumulate. So people are not required to pay interest for 6 months on these loans. And then, you know, interest and capital repayments will start over these 6 months. And then businesses have a maximum of 60 months to repay the loan. Moving on to the next slide. Yeah. The Reserve Bank has, on the next slide, the Reserve Bank has at the same time unveiled a monetary and policy regulatory package, which will complement the fiscal package. I think, as the Minister and the DG said at the beginning, it's important that you think of our response as being a combination of a whole set of interventions, which include things like reducing the interest rates, so the repo rate has been reduced by 200 basis points. We've relaxed, the Reserve Bank has relaxed regulatory requirements, which will allow banks to lend, and will introduce temporary payment holidays to support debtors. And in addition, monetary policy is helping supporting reducing the cost of bond borrowing by providing liquidity in the bond market, which has helped reduce bond deals. Just to sort of highlight and reemphasize, as the Minister also said earlier this week and last week, that this is a comprehensive macro fiscal package which will support economic growth. I think it's finished with my section.
Thank you very much, Chair. Also, there are two more aspects that I just want to bring to the attention of the committee. The timing of the revised budget. Can I ask Edgar to quickly speak to the diagram that is on slide number see properly, Chair. I'm sorry. The slide has titled Timelines for Adjustment Budget to Respond to COVID-19. Can I ask Edgar to speak to that?
Yes, DG, through you, Chair. Okay, so this is, it looks like a bit of a complicated slide, but what I want to focus on is the middle part of the slide, which is the component on the parliamentary process. So as Mr. Chair and members will be aware, we currently at a phase where we had tabled the budget in February, which included the fiscal framework, the division of revenue bill, the appropriation bill, and of course the budget review. Fiscal framework has been adopted by Parliament. The division of revenue bill has been adopted by the National Assembly, awaiting adoption by the National Council of Provinces. What's going to be very, very important for us, as the DG, I think, mentioned earlier, and the minister at the beginning in his opening remarks, is we need as fast a passage of the current bill as possible, so that that will allow us to get into the place where we can table an adjustments budget in order to respond to COVID. So if we can get those bills passed and out of the way, then it allows us legally to table an adjustments, which would include an adjusted appropriation bill and an adjustments appropriation bill and a division of revenue amendment bill. A big reason why this is critical is because, as members will be aware, the president, and reiterated by the minister on Friday last week, indicated that, as well as in this presentation, indicated that a substantial portion of the COVID response will be financed through reprioritization. In other words, the shifting of a total of 130 billion from existing baselines that are there this year in the current bills, and reprioritizing that towards the COVID response. So to the extent that that is required, it will obviously necessitate a great deal of speed, because that will mean that a substantial change in allocations at both national and in the subnational level will be required. And we believe that we can get this done in July, in terms of tabling, late June possibly, early July, we could table an adjustments budget. But we would need fairly quick movement on the current bills in order to give us space to do that. Chair, I will stop there. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. We are done.
Thank you, yeah, DG.
The last part, Chair, is just around procurement. We said we've eased procurement regulations to ensure that we speedily acquire masks. We've issued three sets of regulations from the beginning of this period, whereby we are all trying to ease based on circumstances and environment and timelines. So the current, emphasizing local produce products. We are saying SMEs must begin to play in the bigger schemes. We are ensuring that all of the people who can provide these things should provide them with speed and agency as per the requirements of the health standards and the World Health Organization. All of that is in place. And finally, the monitoring of thereof is going to be critical. We are going to be meeting with all CFOs of government departments tomorrow to actually lay out the reporting and accountability timeline for COVID-19-related expenditure, and including the procurement process. We'll expect them on a weekly basis to report to us. The whole set of regulations, processes that we agreed upon, that we will be issuing out to CFOs tomorrow and accounting officers to make sure that we align ourselves so that there's, as Minister said, there's no opportunity to really misuse public funds at this point in time. We will leave it at that, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, DG. All members, we have about 50 minutes to finish our meeting. I'll request that we get some areas of clarification. Obviously, we have five committees here, and with the best of intention, we can't do justice to the presentation by the minister, the DG, and the department in general. So let's deal with the most important things. We're still going to have a second bite to the presentations when the department come to the respective committees. The intention of this was just for us as committees to get to know what exactly the department is doing. So can members indicate those who want to have something? You don't need to say something today, but let's see. And again, we limit the time. I think if we can have 1 to 1.5 minutes input, other members. So can we see the hands, please?
Thanks, yes. Chair. It's Floyd.
It's Honourable Floyd. Number two, just hold, Honourable Floyd. Number two.
Kill Lewis.
Honourable Kill Lewis. Number three.
George.
Come again.
Roger.
Honourable George.
Honourable George.
Dennis Joseph.
And Honourable Matafa.
Elsie.
Come again.
Honourable Zetwe.
Okay, number five. I didn't get the name, but I'll call you number five, please. Number
Zetwe.
Number
Zetwe. Dennis Joseph.
Number seven, Honourable Joseph. Honourable Sheikh Imam. Who's that?
Kaiso.
Honourable Kaiso.
Kaiso. Kaiso.
Yes, I got that, Honourable Kaiso. Can we please leave it at that? If we still have time, I'll take the second round of inputs. All members, please be considerate of the other members who must speak, so that we can also allow National Treasury to respond. We've got a time limit of 1500 hours. Honourable Floyd Chimambu. Honourable Floyd, please come in.
Thank you very much. Yes, thank you very much, Chair. I hope I'm clear, because some of the comments were not very clear from what was said here.
Yeah,
I just want to
We can hear you very well.
Thank you. I just want to confirm something very clear here, that the 500 billion which was announced by the president, its design is that the only new money which is being proposed is the 95 billion which must be borrowed, because the 200 billion is loan guarantees, like meaning that like those who want to borrow money elsewhere can use the guarantee scheme of government for loans, and then about 130 billion is going to be budgeted. And 70 billion is tax deferment. So that those three categories already make it to be 400 billion. So what has to be borrowed is about 100 billion. And then and it looks like in the priority list of government is to go to the IMF, despite now a revelation which the minister was denying in the public spaces before. That will be interest from the IMF, and there will be conditions. What we would want is that the National Treasury must give us what are the conditionalities that are going to come with a loan from the IMF if they are pursuing that route in terms of these interventions. Because we do not want to be in a situation where we are trapped in an intergenerational debt from the IMF, which have huge impacts in the sovereignty of South Africa to decide its own fiscal and monetary policy interventions in that regard. And recurrently, National Treasury
and the ministers seem to be saying that, you know, we're going to implement structural reforms. What do you mean? What exactly do you want to do when you say structural reforms? Because even amongst yourselves, there is no consensus on that economic strategy which was issued last year in terms of which areas must be looked at. There's no consistency in terms of what is articulated there in terms of the distribution of spectrum of other interventions. It doesn't speak to what is broadly government policy. What exactly do you mean by structural reforms? What do you want to do, which will then change the economy in a manner to get clarity in that regard? Then the other issue that we want to talk to is the policy that... And that is problematic. If you have got Imperial and apparently who are the sole procurers of the Solidarity Fund, which all of us have put the money in there with the hope that in terms of what is essential and what is immediate and in a transparent and open way. Can you get clarity in terms of the status of the regulatory framework over the Solidarity? And then we'll make inputs for transition. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks. Honorable Kalous, please, can I limit you to two questions? And if you could wrap them in just 1 minute, please. Thank you.
No, I can't do that. I'll get the same treatment as every other member of the committee. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Honorable Kalous, I
appreciate that we're under a lot of pressure, but there are a lot of important issues in this presentation. And I will try to be as quick as possible. Director General, thank you for the effort that your team is making. Slide 23, I want to draw your attention to, is an absolute bombshell of a slide.
Honorable Kalous, before you proceed, I said in immediately after the DG that we'll still have got a second bite from the different committees. We've got five committees here, and I think it's fair that we try and give everybody at least an opportunity. So as long as you have got that at the back of your mind. Thank you.
Yes, please. As long as that's applied fairly to all members, Chair.
That's what I'm requesting from all of you.
The slide 23 says that you predict that between 3 and 7 million jobs are going to be lost. That is a quite stunning and terrifying slide. It was brushed over very quickly, and I think that it's important to take note of that. And I just want to ask your opinion on whether you think that the more of the economy should be opened sooner to try and ameliorate the effects of that devastating prediction that you have published today in slide 23. Then, could you please detail where the 100 billion rand in existing budget cuts are going to come from? You have said that there will be some savings on flights and things like that, but that is relatively small. And you've said that 30 billion will come from provinces, but that still leaves another 100 billion. Please let us know where that is coming from. Then the 100 billion that you have allocated to jobs and small business support, if you could please explain where that is going. We haven't heard, that's a huge sum of money. We haven't heard detail on where that is going. And if you could please update us on your progress with the unions on public sector wage cuts, because obviously those savings identified are now going to be critical. So is there an agreement? How far are you away from an agreement? And what is the nature of it? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable George.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I won't repeat what questions my colleague, Honorable Hill Lewis, has asked, but I mean, it's very clear that we need to have structural reform. I mean, the IMF is going to require that if we're going to get loans. But I think we need some clarity on what those structural reforms are going to be. I mean, before the virus was even here, our economy was teetering, it was fragile, and it was about to fall over. And here we see the horrendous numbers that are coming. So I think we need to also consider, and it was completely silent on, The biggest failed intervention by government in our economy has been black economic empowerment. And the question has to be is when is our economy going to be allowed to be as efficient as it can possibly be without an intervention that has not achieved its objective and is actually preventing us from growing? Then two very brief questions about the relief package. On the tax relief, it's completely silent on salaried employees. For example, everybody that now needs to work from home because they're forced by the lockdown to do so. Are they going to be getting some relief for working from home as would in other circumstances had they worked more than 50% of their time from home? Whether those requirements are going to be relaxed so that hard-pressed salary earners can get some benefit from being locked up at home. And also then on the living annuities, we welcome the fact that there's a bit of liberalization on that. But why can't the deductions be also reduced to zero for members who don't need the money now? Because it's completely inefficient for them to make a withdrawal, compulsory withdrawal, at or near the bottom of the market. Thank you very much.
Honorable Matafa.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thanks for the presentation. Thanks, Minister and DG. I'm going to be very quick, Chair. On the savings, the 130 billion to be saved from provinces and municipalities, we note that most of the allocations to these sectors lie in infrastructure grants. When we say make savings there, are we not running a risk of slowing the public infrastructure program? What measures are we going to put in place to mitigate such a risk? The second one, Chair, is on the borrowing part of the 1 trillion. I just need to know what will it do to the government debt levels, one, and secondly, the guaranteed exposure as well as the debt to GDP ratio. The impact on that, I'd like to be briefed on that, please. And then, Chair, still on the 1 trillion, I'm interested to know if whether have we used a particular model to arrive at the 1 trillion, or is it merely on the package of interventions that we think are required, or was there a financial model that was used to arrive at the 1 trillion?
Thank you. Second, Honorable Matafa.
Can I throw in the last one? Just last one. My apologies. Maybe let me skip the rest. In terms of saving of employment, are we considering any tax reforms in order to encourage companies to endure the losses whilst in the pandemic period so that they are able maybe to claim them in the next financial run as the financial position turn around? Thank you very much, Chair.
There's Honorable who I called number five. I didn't get the name very well. Please come in, Honorable Member.
Honorable Liz from Scopa. Honorable Liz, you can go ahead.
Honorable Mazambane, please come in.
Okay. Thank you. Sanbane. Two questions, please, for the Minister. The first is the question of funding for SOEs. Is there any further funding going to be made available to SAA as working capital as opposed to debt financing? And secondly, the question of the Cuban doctors, how much is that costing South Africa and which department will have to pick up that cost? Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Tutoi.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, I'll be brief. Can government guarantee that government pension funds and private pension funds will be safe and not be used to finance any initiatives that are COVID-related? On the banks, may banks refuse loans to entities and businesses? Who sets the criteria? And please provide the criteria that will be used. And lastly, please provide more information on the 200 billion for job creation, SME support, and how will it be applied for job creation? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Honorable Joseph.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon. I just would like Treasury to assist with all the national departments' money for the next 6 months. It will be unspent money on international travel, oversight study tours, S&Ts, domestic travels. If that national departments could return that money to the national treasury itself. And also provincial and local government that had money planned for the same reasons to their respective health departments, I think, return the money to that they're not going to spend. The second one, Chairperson, I would like to know what SARS and National Treasury is doing about the illegal trade on cigarettes, because government is losing a lot of money now. Money that we think we are necessarily losing now, and of course that doesn't mean that they mustn't go after these people who do illegal trade. What is SARS doing about that? And then the other money that we are losing over a couple of years now is the illegal online gambling. That business and world is going on, probably have slowed down with the lockdown, but there is a lot of money that goes down the drain. And in that areas, we need to get ourselves really on par with international standards to collect our money. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Honorable Sheikh Imam.
Can you hear me?
Honorable Sheikh Imam.
Yes. Thank you very much for that. Thank you, Treasury, for that presentation. You know, a lot of what you're telling us is what we've been hearing for many, many years. Labor-intensive growth is low. We have skills constraints in the country, special planning. Now, what is it different that we're going to be able to do? Because we've been complaining about this for the last 10 or 20 years, and I think it's going on for 26 years. But secondly, my problem is that you're giving 20 billion then allocated to the municipality. And you know the challenges that we've been facing in the country with over 240 billion annually lost through the procurement processes. You've already heard complaints in the media of where there's fraud and corruption, particularly there. Now you've given them 20 billion rand in terms of that, and you're talking about for the vulnerable communities. What measures are you putting in place? Why did you not have a standardized pricing, particularly for the PPEs in the country, to avoid corruption at the level that is going? And very importantly, you're talking about water licenses, and that's where I want to express my concern. My understanding is a lot of the water and water boards and licenses in this country are controlled by certain monopoly capitalists. Is that what you're telling us? Could you kindly explain what is the urgency in this water licenses that you are talking about that must be given out very, very in a short space of time? Lastly, you speak about the issue of alcohol and tobacco and things. What you're not saying is the benefit and the positive side of it in by restricting the sale of tobacco and alcohol. Krutaskir Hospital is a good example, which is empty today. Over and above, it is less pressure on the police department, on the justice department, on the social development. People are living better lives, better quality of less gender-based violence, 74% in the Western Cape alone. Why don't you look at that as a positive rather than just bringing in the resources? You're bringing in 10 billion, it's costing you 100 billion at the expense of the lives of all people in the country. Thank you.
Honorable Sheikh. Honorable Kaiso.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. My two questions. Firstly, is the presentation talks about prolonged dislocation of the economy. So I just want to understand from the DG, does this mean that we have to look at the fiscal and monetary policy? That's the first question. Secondly, Honorable Chair, is on structural reforms. How do we assure particularly the public sector and public service workers that structural reforms do not necessarily imply privatization, cutting of wages and salary, and slash expenditure. So it's just those two questions. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Honourable Members. I'll allow the co-chairs, Honourable Mashango, Honourable Shengwa, Honourable Yunus Karim, and Honourable Masangwai, to also come in.
Thank you, Chairperson Mashango.
Welcome, Honourable. Can I go on? Please do.
Thank you, Chair Sheng. Chairperson, my question is on the first question is on the structural reforms. The President and the Finance Minister have referred to the need to ensure that structural reform in the post-COVID-19 recovery phase. And my question, therefore, in relation to this statement, is that while the economy reforms are certainly needed in many of the identified sectors, how do we assure, particularly in the public sector and private sector workers, that structural reform do not necessarily imply privatization, cutting of wages, and slashing of spending. I think somehow it's related to what Honorable Lewis have asked, though we are coming from different angles. And how is the government planning to stabilize the economy, further reducing borrowing cost, stabilizing the exchange rate, and imposing measures to limit money leaving South Africa? My last part of the question, Chair, with your permission, thank you. The COVID-19 crisis is teaching the world, including us in South Africa, that there is a need for more effective governance and a more interventionist and proactive role for the state. It is showing South Africa that the state can play a developmental and life-saving role. Therefore, Chairperson, I just want to know from Treasury, what measures are being taken to strengthen and build the capacity of the state so that we are able to survive future disasters that are going to inevitably occur. I will leave it at that, Chairperson, and respect your directive, because I also wanted to speak to the issue of the welfare tax, but I'll leave it at that for now. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Honourable Shengwa.
Okay.
Honourable Shengwa.
Honourable Shengwa. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Can hear you?
Three things very quickly, Co-Chair. One, obviously, I think we will still need more time. I think we need to prioritize it. I think Treasury must understand that we are not going to exhaust all the matters today because of time constraints. So I think at the back of their minds, that must be understood. And I think that follow-up questions can be sent in writing for the purposes of ensuring that we are effective. Secondly, Chair, South Africa's debt servicing costs obviously standing at about 229 billion rands for 2020-21. What are the implications of the World Bank, IMF, and New Development Bank loan mean to that? And what's the new scope and the roadmap in so far as servicing those debts are concerned? And thirdly, we're obviously dealing with an exorbitant amount of expansions and deviations and the supplementary budget that the minister spoke about will obviously have to be prioritized. So I would want really Treasury to take us through the frameworks put in place to safeguard the non-abuse of these expansions and deviations. And I think there's many examples where this has already happened, the bridge border post, you've got the tender in Gauteng, you've got the abuse of procurement insofar as the food parcels are concerned. And what is important is sufficient communication taken place between National Treasury and government departments and entities to make sure that they are procuring within the parameters of the emergency spending correctly. So I think that clarity will be required. Thanks, Chair.
Honourable Linus
Karim. Yeah, thank you very much. Firstly, I think, Comrade Chair, we shouldn't polarise health and economic considerations.
In the circumstances, both are interrelated. We need to find the right balance. Not easy, but we can do it.
Honorable Karim, are you still there? Honorable Karim, are you still there? I think
Cut. You move on to the next one. He's buffering. You can take next one.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Masangai, are you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you very well. Thank you.
Thank you, Shanga. Thank you, Minister, your colleagues and our colleagues. Just one clarity-seeking question. The centralization of procurement by National Treasury. Why are they doing that? More especially, even taking powers from provincial and local government spheres. Because the provincial and local government are spheres of government. They are not tiers. There's a difference between a sphere and a tier of government. Because there is a constitutional imperative in terms of Chapter 3 that outline the originality of each and every sphere of government, where they derive their existence, their powers and functions. And in that, there is also what we call the principles. And amongst those is Principle 41, sub-principle, subsection G, which talks about the powers and functions of each sphere. Why? Under which legal instrument did Treasury take away powers of department and the other two spheres of government to centralize procurement? Because I thought Treasury also played an oversight role. But now, if it wants to take over and do things for department and local government and provincial government, I think in the long run, it's a big problem. So it's a clarifying question, Chairperson.
Thank you so much, Honorable Members.
Chairperson Yunus, you're throwing me 7 seconds.
Okay, please come in, Honorable.
Okay, I'm timing myself. Okay, so secondly, I think members are right to raise this thing. What exactly is meant by economic restructuring? Parliament's entitled to know. Treasury should either reply in writing or certainly do so the next time we engage on these issues. Thirdly, I think that people are right to ask, members are, and the public, yes, there may be a need for deviations on procurement, but why won't Treasury come out together with trade and industry to set out what exactly these deviations are and how they'll be managed? And finally, the questions raised about who's managing solidarity funds, that's a fair question too. We need an answer. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll carry that over to the next meeting. And finally, Dingleledi Mashango, we acknowledge that I can speak within the time limits. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Members. Thank you, Co-Chairs. Just to add on the questions and clarifications. Number one from
Chairperson,
my side.
Sorry, can I raise a point of order, please?
Please do.
Chair, now I hear you telling us that we've got a time constraint, and the invitation for the meeting was sent out to continue until 4 o'clock. There was also an agreed way of raising our request to ask questions, and that was in the meeting chat group. Now, that hasn't been followed. I believe I was one of the first ones to indicate my request to ask questions. I haven't been acknowledged. Rather, we went for a kind of a school-ground bully boy scrum in order to determine who gets to talk. Now, I don't think that's fair, and I don't think we're giving the presentation from Treasury sufficient scrutiny. They've taken their time to prepare the presentation, and I think we'd like to engage with the property. I don't think we've been given a fair opportunity to do so.
Yes, Honourable Member, I don't know the invitation you got from our side we're given 2 hours, but can you please come in quickly and raise the issues that you wanted to raise?
Thank you very much, Chair, although I know there are others that will now be jealous and also want to come in. My first question obviously comes specifically from the NCOP's point of view in terms of the processing of the DORA bill, which we are sitting with now, and we've been asked to try and expedite this process. The question I'd like to ask to Treasury is, how much is DORA expected to change in the adjustment? So what we're dealing with now is just a case of pushing something through, knowing full well that it's going to change in its entirety, or should we give this due consideration and process it properly as we would normally and then merely await for the adjustment thereafter? My second question is aimed at the Minister, and just a question to the Minister to ask, how much interaction is there at Cabinet level between Ministers? Because it seems to me like him and the President are perhaps on the same page. But there are other ministers like Minister Patel, Chele, and Dlamini Zuma, who quite clearly don't seem to be on the same page in terms of taking both a health and a financial aspect when considering what regulations to put in place. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, honourable members. My apologies again about the time constraint. I indicated at the beginning that you have got five committees here, and so we can't be able to do justice to the presentation. I think we'll follow up in our respective committees about some of the issues. But let me just throw in two quick comments. DG, when you came up with the structural faults in the economy, I think we are leaving one very important one, the inequality which is there in the economy. And this COVID-19 has just again exposed the economy of South Africa, the way it is unequal. You only spoke about monopolies. But inequality in our country, you know, that is not just monopolies. It also goes along the racial lines. So I think we need to deal that as your structural faults in the economy, which is sometimes responsible for the economy not being able to perform. Secondly, DG, there's a complaint coming from small businesses that they are still not being paid on time, not about COVID, just that can we make sure and come back to this committee and tell us how we are going to, just to make sure that government departments and state-owned companies, they pay small businesses on time, especially at this time. We've always argued the question of we agreed on 30 days, but it doesn't happen, and there are no consequences for that. Can we deal with that? And please come back to the committees and say exactly what you are doing with that. And again, another complaint, I think it has been alluded to by the other members. The access to the COVID-19 funds, small businesses, again, they are saying they are just being spectators on this thing. They are not being taken into consideration. Can you please take these committees into confidence as to exactly how to ensure that black businesses and small businesses are being considered here? Thank you very much. Can you try, please, to – there are many questions. And as I said, honourable members, we are still going to have a second bite as it comes for when they come to our respective committees. Honourable Minister, I don't know whether the Deputy Minister is there. Welcome, Deputy Minister, if you are there. Minister and your team and the DG and the Deputy Minister.
No, I'm here, Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Oh, welcome, DM. Sorry.
Thank you very much, honourable members, for your contribution and useful interventions. I'll ask Dondo and his team to respond to some of the other issues. I'm going to return the some of the policy issues, including that question of the IMF, which I see some members tweeting about it and making political football out of it. But I'll come back to that and deal with it. So if you could allow the DG to... DG, very quickly, don't be long, DG. There's no time. And then I'll come back and deal with some of the policy issues. Over to you, DG. Don't be long.
Sorry, Chairman.
Yeah.
Yes.
That.
I just this is Jordan Hill Lewis. I just want to get a firm answer on the question of the time allocation here, because we were informed that this meeting has been approved for 3 hours. I understand that an application was made for this meeting to proceed for 3 hours. We were told it would be a three-hour meeting. Can we just get absolute clarity? Was an application made? Was that application approved? And why are we limited to 2 hours?
Can I allow the other honourable chairs to come in? From our side, we're definitely told about that is standing committee on appropriations. It was 2 hours, and we're also told that the minister is also having other engagements with his team. Honourable chairs, can you quickly come in and clarify that one?
Chair, honourable. The I got from our committee. Sorry, is it declared? Okay, I'll wait. Sorry.
Oh. No. Come in, Commander Honourable Eunice.
Why is Dikeledi laughing when you don't have time? Okay, so as I understood it from Nkululeko, unless I got it wrong, it meant to be 13:00 to 15:30. What I understand is that I think the whips know it. The system we're using only allows for a certain number of committees to sit simultaneously. So that's how they structure the time. But if it's possible, even the minister has to exit, the DA is around. If it's possible, I don't see why we shouldn't extend it by 30 minutes, bearing in mind that this is also part of an ongoing exchange with Treasury.
Okay. Thank you. Is there any counter view, honorable members? Yes.
There's none, Chairperson. I've not been informed about the time limited. And Honourable Karim, I'm just laughing the way the chairperson is chasing the kids from him. And I have written something on the management chat. I don't know about the procedure. There's something that the last speaker or the last presenter spoke about the processing of the bills, that it needs to be fast-tracked. And we need to understand that as committees. Thanks.
Honourable Shangwa.
Chair, if we may just go to that management group, because our understanding was that the meeting is ending at 4. So I think let's just clarify that. And I think let's not try and negotiate an extension. The issue is that the meeting was ending at 4. So I think let's just clarify the confusion on the side, but the meeting is approved for 4 o'clock. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. Can management deal with that and come back to us? Can I? But there was also a question of National Treasury and the Minister having another engagement. But can we start with answering the questions in the meantime? National Treasury Minister?
We are more than ready to start answering. Thank you. Chair, I thought I understood you very well when you said this is the first engagement. And in our presentation, we did say that the idea here is that we have to present a revised budget. If one was to characterize this meeting, one would characterize it as a MTBPS. In October, and the budget coming in February, and the budget in this case will be whether we show broad numbers, MTVPS, and we don't go into detail. We estimate, because clearly the process to work through the details is being finalized, and then at the February budget, then we announce. Same thing here, Chair. I think only last week that we worked on a number of 500 billion. One can imagine, Minister, honorable members, that some of the details we have not finalized them, because we the way the inclusivity of the budget process means departments and provinces need to be fully briefed and fully engaged. What I know, for instance, the 130 billion or say 100 billion rand has been worked out, and the details thereof, including the details of the 100 billion rand that is set aside for job creation and SME development and support, etc. So all of these things are loose balls that are still hanging for good reasons. Not that we don't show what we are doing, but it's important to work through the details. If you say you are going to support informal business and spaza shop, what's the criteria in order to ensure that money goes to the right people? What's the policy framework? If you're going to ensure that you create jobs for young people, what is it going to be and how does it fuse in the long-term plan of government? So I think, as we said, is that the revised budget or supplementary budget, as the minister called it earlier, will come. And at that point, details will be finalized. As said yesterday, for instance, we had a meeting with the MECs for finance. We were talking through the details of the 30 billion as to how impact, what impact will that do to provinces. So I think, but for now we have a target. We have got a plan that says this is how we want to spend, this is how we want to reprioritize. So I think, so without answering each detail of the questions related to those aspects, I would say it's important that we firm that up, including the debt level, including the issues, the debt to GDP ratio, including what exactly is National Treasury saying about what's going to be the impact of COVID-19 and impact of downgrade. What's the new framework? What's the new GDP number? We don't have it now. We have got estimates that we are working through. The impact is unknown. So I think when we say we have to get this process forward, we mean exactly that, Chair. And we have got a target, and we'll obviously approach Parliament in terms of the not October like normally, but obviously we have to bring that much, much earlier in terms of what we, how we answer broadly some of the things. There's also a question about, there's a question here. Sorry, Chair, I'm just looking at my notes. We released a government paper last year towards an economic policy for South Africa. In there, we had detailed structural reform issues that we were outlining, and this paper was deliberated widely, if not only by various think tanks in South Africa, but most South Africans. And we were deliberating making the national debate last year. And those things will remain relevant. Those things will remain relevant in a post-COVID environment. And all of those are things that we have been saying to ourselves, we need to speed up and speed up in a way that we can begin to get benefits of embarking on such. We have seen now by just releasing spectrum in the COVID-19 environment, people like Telkom and others have started making maybe data cheap, accessibility of some broadband, and making sure that it's possible. So it is possible that the ease of doing business can be enhanced when we do some structural reforms. But we are more than happy, Chair, to again, share the same thoughts and documents of what exactly do we mean by what structural reform in this context mean for us. And we can include new areas around what you just mentioned, Chair, around talking about the poor and inequality, and bring that as an issue that structurally must be dealt with. And I think one welcomes that. We are putting in place...
DG, di tabadi tswa matlhong. DG, your video, please, on. Sorry, Chair.
Chair, I just want to prove to Honourable Dikele that I'm in the office. You can see the background. This is my office in Pretoria. We work hard in Treasury.
Sorry, Chair.
Thank you.
So I was just saying that it's important that we ensure that we do structural reforms and follow what we said through last year. In terms of COVID funding, COVID-19 related funds and reprioritization, what we are doing, we met with key departments this week, 2 days ago. The day before last year, Monday night. We met with key departments that are going to be spending heavily. Education, health, correctional services, and two other departments that are going to be spending big time on COVID-19 type spending. And we agreed on broad guidelines that we need to adhere to. We are writing them up tomorrow, and this is all in the direction that Foresight gave us with the instruction of Cabinet Secretariat to ensure that this happens, including the discussions I had with the AG on two occasions, to ensure that we put audit measures in place to audit spending around COVID-19 spending, because we think there's opportunities there for wrongdoing, and we must deal with the fact that there's guidelines and rules that must be adhered to as we embark on the spending. So we will be, as I said, meeting with departments tomorrow, DGs, including provincial DGs, CFOs, and basically indicating what's critical to ensure that we spend as per the guidelines that are there. And Chair, Minister did say you talked to policy issues. Issues of deviations. Our request, honourable members, when we request that we pass the appropriation budget earlier, it's all with the idea of ensuring that we avoid doing a whole lot of deviations that are being requested now. Currently, we've got 5 departments. The law currently says before the appropriation bill can be passed, you can only spend 45% of your last year's expenditure. Now, we have got 5 departments, small departments, that have already started spending, that are almost exceeding, and we need appropriation, and mainly because of pressures. GCIS, for instance, is one of those departments, whereby they are doing more, they are spending more in terms of making sure that COVID messaging is enhanced. So it's important that we request that comes through so that these deviations can be dealt with quickly. There's a question on illegal trade of cigarettes. I think Edward will speak to that. Prolonged dislocation of the economy, Honorable Sheikh Imam. Look, there is a relationship between monetary and fiscal policy. And what we're saying is that because we don't know the impact, I think we have demonstrated, and the Reserve Bank and ourselves have demonstrated, that as and when need be, we will then have to adjust. So I think if the economy then is dislocated for a longer period, obviously the impact is going to be much, much more. And I think we really need to make sure that we spend in an appropriate way in making some interventions. Honorable Hill-Lewis asked about slide 23. What basically slide 23, and with your permission, Chair, can I go to that slide quickly so that I answer appropriately? Slide 23, what basically we are doing there is just to show how quick and how slow and how long it will take and the impact. You are right. It's going to take us, if we are quick, minimum jobs will be impacted. 3 million or even less than 3 million. If it's going to take us long, we're going to even reach about 7.7 million jobs that may be impacted. So I think it's important then, as I said, we are characterizing the challenges here and say we have to move quickly to get the economy back to normal, but also take into account that we also have to contain the impact of the virus and the impact of, in slowing it down and ensure that we're not affected. Oh, now, Shivambo is right. The number is as is, over and above the number that we are, it's actually 95 billion, over and above the number that you are going to be getting more from borrowings, because the other money is actually ensuring that it's existing resources that we are reprioritizing, existing interventions that we easing the impact and so on and so on. Yes, the actual number that extra over and above the estimate that we have penciled in February will be that. But again, that number obviously will be firmed up in terms of how we approach this at the revised budget, when we clearly now would have a better understanding. And also the cost of debt, that number will be informed by how much it's costing us. And so the revision of that, of the framework, as presented in the revised budget, will outline some of those realities. So, Chair, I'll stop there. I don't know if my colleagues have got other things that they want to, Honorable, you can see me again, that they want to, talk to, but I'll stop there, Chair. Thank you.
What, your other colleagues, are they coming in?
They are not going to come in because it looks like I've taken everything. But no, illegal trade of cigarettes. The question was there, and maybe, the Commission of SARS can come in. There's also a question about FAA, working capital. Sorry, let me do that. The SAA working capital is not provided for in the 9.2 billion that we've outlined. That money is essentially to repay debt, as indicated previously. If you think about the working capital, that money is used already with the 5 billion allocation that we made because it came from there. So all that is there, and we'll obviously put this in perspective later again, is that the money that's there is to actually repay debt. In terms of Cuban doctors and how much it's costing us, I don't know the details of how much it's costing us. We don't have that. The Department of Health can give the details there because it comes in the normal spending of the department and the choices, policy choices that they make. So again, but those reports normally come every quarter. So, but at this point in time, I don't have the actual number that I can share with the committee.
Okay. Team National Treasury.
Chair, if I can respond to the tobacco question.
Please, Commissioner.
So, good afternoon, members. Thanks for the opportunity. I mean, just first of all, a few things. The first is to say that the illicit tobacco trade is not something new. It's something that we are grappling with and have grappled with. It's something that we work also in conjunction with the other investigative and enforcement agencies of government. Specifically in respect of the current COVID arrangements, there are two concerns that we raise. The one is the concern that naturally the fact that the regulations do not permit the sale of alcohol or tobacco, for that matter, is going to have a significant revenue impact. I can share with the committee month to date that in terms of beer sales, we have under-recovered 664 million. Month to date, in terms of wine, we have under-recovered almost 300 million. Spirits, just over 400 million, and cigarettes, just over 300 million. So year to date, our under-recovery from these activities is 1.5 billion, and we are not yet. We're just about through the first month. That excludes today. And then, of course, a concern is that the problem with illegitimate or illicit sale of cigarettes, given the fact that we cannot claim as a country that we are on top of that yet, naturally, during times like this, when the legal sale of these products are not permitted, it encourages the trade of these products in the illicit economy. And that is a concern that we just want to register with the committee.
Any other person from Team Treasury?
Chair, before the another point, the Solidarity Fund. I can talk to that quickly. I'm sorry I missed that.
Please.
One.
No. Don't leave that one to me. Leave that one to me.
Okay, let me take another one, Minister, about the issue about departments and provinces. We did not, Honorable Chair, take the power from provinces and local government in any of our processes of procurement. We made sure, as I said, there were three sets of interventions that we made on the procurement fund based on necessity and addressing the issue at the point in time. There was a need at some point, as per the Department of Health, and in this case, the sector, and we're not looking at it in terms of, departments or provinces, there was a need to procure centrally PPEs in terms of addressing issues of economies of scale, which was a request that came from the Department of Health and where we responded. And again, in the same instruction note, we made it clear departments and provincial departments and entities can and can still on their own procure. So we did take that. Even in the instruction note that we issued a few days ago, we emphasized the same point, that departments should continue so long as they meet the prescripts that are outlined. And in the presentation, I outlined these prescripts as to what they are. Registered with the CSD, your price should be within the price range that we have instituted, and it's public knowledge. that you can only buy within certain price levels. Finally, that the require the specifications of Department of Health and specifications of the Department of World Health Organization, insofar as health requirements are concerned, should be met. So, Chair, we have done that. So it is not the way the chairperson puts it that we have taken the powers. We cannot. But when need be, there's transversal contracting, which is provided for in our law, and we do it centrally for everybody. And when need be, based on interventions that I need, we can then use the powers that we have to actually ensure that we procure in a way that is seen to be as per 217 of the Constitution. And I think that's what we've emphasized. So I will leave it at that, and Minister can talk about the other.
Thank you, TG. Honourable Minister.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and members of the committee. I just want to bring the discussion back to the core purpose of the meeting, which is the financial implications of COVID-19 on both the economy and the budget. Again, to re-emphasize the backdrop that we are confronting. I'm sorry you can't see me because I don't know how to do it.
There you go.
The backdrop, yes, I know you can see now I live in grass.
The backdrop
is that of a global economy that is in 2020 going to be in a recession with growth at minus 3.0%, and with the South African economy expected to contract by -5.8%. But the global economy and the South African economy expected to pick up in 2021 5.8 globally and 4% in South Africa. I think that's a very important thing to bear in mind. In between, I've skipped a number of issues. And within that, it's low inflation environment, supported mostly by low oil prices and the fact that global demand is very low. So that's a very important backdrop. And so if you go to slide number 4, which I think they've given you, you see the depth of the contraction in the South African economy, which is much sharper than we've experienced before. And so that's an issue of concern. The DG spoke about some of the structural issues in the South African economy, which I'm going to see in slide number 5. I don't have to go back and talk about that in some detail. And some of the structural reforms, again, you see that going up to page 7 and page, probably page 8, if this thing can move. Page 7, it ends there. So I think that provides just, the background, but even before COVID-19 hit us, as you recall, I said, we're already in a technical recession. And this situation has been made worse by the COVID situation. Now, in this current situation, and I think the commissioner began to give us a very good indication of the poor performance of revenue collection. And we expect revenue collection to come down probably by some 32% or more, which means that we have less revenue but greater pressures on the fiscals to spend. And please, members, I want you to bear with me. When people still demand more expenditure with revenue coming down, how do you close the gap? You close the gap by borrowing. You close the gap by restructuring your expenditure. You close the gap by closing some programs altogether and focusing on those growth enhancing and those which are unavoidable. You remove any whistles and bells and frills and go to the core of how to continue functioning. Having said all of that, Let me deal with a few policy issues. The first one is on the IMF issue. And I think, of course, one can take an ideological position about the IMF. But the fact of the matter is that the IMF has clarified now that they do have these facilities available for different countries, for lower income countries. There's a facility that is there for middle income countries. There's another facility. We would qualify for the middle income countries. And we haven't begun any negotiations. It's a long process, which will take a number of weeks for us to get into that. But we have not closed the window. It's something that we should still look at. If it's going to be any favorable to us, will there be any conditions attached? My understanding is that there will be no conditions attached. In fact, I'm not interested in discussing conditionalities with the IMF. I think we know what to do for our economy and we'll do what we can do domestically ourselves. So I'm not interested in conditionalities discussions. The issues of savings and provinces, I think DG has dealt with that. You must also recall that we're also making special provision of plus minus 20 billion rand, which will be there to help support municipalities. And between the National Treasury and COGTA, we'll see how to manage that. On SOEs, are we going to continue funding SOEs? Well, I'm afraid that I can't be definitive to say no. Because, for example, what are we going to do with the land bank? We cannot afford the land bank to fail. In a sense, the land bank is probably too big to fail in the agricultural sector. But also the land bank is connected throughout the financial system. The land bank builds in the market and so on. So I can't say we can't save the land bank. The land bank is too big to fail. We have to make sure that the lenders to land bank, ourselves, even the SAB, somehow come into the party to rescue the land bank. But there are some SOEs which are not deserving of any funding at all. And we're making a big mistake that we continue to fund them purely on the basis that they're state-owned. Am I going to promise you that there will be no sale of any state-owned enterprise? The answer is no, because there will be sales. And that's privatization. There will be sales of some of the poorly functioning state-owned enterprises. And we need to grab the bull by the scruff of its neck and deal with this matter. There are those which are going to be sold, and we are going to have to sell them. Are the pension funds safe? The answer is yes. As far as I know, they're safe. I know there are calls for pension funds to be directed to invest in specific projects. I think the key issue for us as the leading agency in the country is to make sure that we prepare projects, we make them available so that investors would want to invest in them. I know for certain that if they're good projects, life insurance companies are going to invest in those projects because they see an outcome. But we have to ensure that which people, oh God, I have to rush to another meeting, that which people invest in, they can receive a return in the future. We mustn't do to people what we've done with the e-toll system, where people invested in the e-tolls as a private-public initiative, and then we're dilly-dallying about the payment of e-tolls. That does not encourage investors at all. So we have to avoid that if we want life companies to invest in the future. The 200 billion rand facility, I think Ian has tried to explain it. I think it's being activated, and I think it's a good private sector initiative in this regard. There's something I need to bring to your attention, colleagues, which I think we have not talked about it now at DG Dondo. The fact that S&P has downgraded us again to BB-, although with a stable outlook, but it's a big blow again to South Africa. It basically means that the is it the JP Morgan World Bond Index will rebalance. And as a result of that rebalancing, we're likely going to be out of the index, which really is a sad, sad, sad day for me and for South Africa, because, you know, if we're out of that index by tomorrow, it's bad news, bad, bad news. Now, let me come to the Solidarity Fund. Let me indicate that the Solidarity Fund is having a governance structure. It is a board of directors, which is chaired by Gloria Sirove and a number of other private sector participants, Sizwe Ngasane, Martin Kingston, and others, Ibrahim Patel, Tito Mboweni, as well are part of the board of directors. Then the board has appointed an executive team, a chief executive, chief financial officer, and supply and chain manager. It has been, and then the EXCO and a number of subcommittees, procurement, as I said, supply chain, and so on. From the business side, the organization Business for South Africa is very much part of the process. And then the South African government has given an initial funding of 100 million rand, which Dondo, I hope you've paid. And then the lotteries fund has given 50 million. So from the public side, 150 million. Then from the private sector side, I'm aware that Mary Oppenheimer has given a billion rand, and I think John Oppenheimer as well, another billion. So there's 2 billion from the Oppenheimers. And the other private sector contributors, the ministers, the president, deputy president, one third of their salary is also going to go to the Solidarity Fund. And how it operates, I really should encourage you to get in touch with Nomkhita, who is the chief executive officer. But really, they move very fast with procurement and so on. And they try and reach out to private companies to provide pro bono work, whether it's pro bono legal works, pro bono transport and logistics. For example, this thing of Imperial I hear about is causing a lot of unhappiness. As far as I know, their relationship with the Solidarity Fund is on a pro bono basis. And I think we should be clear about that, and we can find out more from the Solidarity Fund. And the last point, which is a bit of a cheeky political point, is whether there's any interaction with other ministers and whether we see things the same way are we at EDEM. As far as I know, ministers are involved in a number of committees, and there are clusters, cabinet clusters, then there are specific cabinet committees, there are ad hoc committees, and issues are brought together, processed, and submitted to the cabinet. And once cabinet has taken a decision, those decisions are binding on all ministers, even if you don't like it. I mean, for example, I didn't like the continuous ban on tobacco and alcohol, but I lost the debate, and therefore I have to toe the line. That's the line. I know I'm losing a lot of revenue in the middle of being under pressure to spend. But nevertheless, that's a decision of the cabinet, and I have to fall in line if I want to be a member of the executive. If I can't fall in line, then if you can't fall in line, then you must leave and let other people continue to run things. So one has to fall in line in that regard. So, Honorable Chair, I think thank you very much for the opportunity to have this conversation with yourselves. And I think we should open the lines of communication. If there's an issue that bothers any of the chairperson anytime, which may be other members of the committee keep asking the chair, please feel free to call me. We have a chat. We have these technologies these days. We can talk through issues so that we don't let issues to pile up before we come to the committees. But situation is difficult. One, I am in 3 or 4 or 5 meetings a day, and it's quite difficult. But I think we're up to the challenge. It's very difficult. I know, for example, that some people saw 500 billion rand and are busy planning schemes of how to steal, how to loot, and are going to use the procurement systems as a way to try and steal. The money is not there for enriching anybody. These are interventions to support our people and to support the economy during this difficult time. And we have to have a common understanding that in the first place, we're having a health interventions. But together in a dialectical sense, also preparing the ground to get the economy going when we reach level two or level one in this situation. Honorable Chair, thank you very much. Much appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. You heard the Minister is having a glasnost type of policy openness, so it's contactable through the committees and through the chairs. But I've been communicating with management, and they're telling me that the Minister will be leaving us, but Team National Treasury is still available until 4. And again, we have been given permission to continue with the the virtual meeting. So, Minister, you are excused. I've got names that have been sent here of honored members who had their hands up, and that's where we'll start. I think the first person will be Honorable Vessels. There's Honorable Sarupen. There's Honorable Okamp, Honorable Morolong, Honorable Peters, Honorable Mlenzana, Honorable Mente. I think that's how far we go. Honorable Peters. Can we do it in that order? Hello.
Samuel.
Okay. Hello.
Yes, Chair Samuel.
And lastly, Honorable Somyo. Okay, can we do it in that order? Honorable members, 4 o'clock is a cutoff time, and I think let's take cue from the first group of honorable members who spoke before us. We don't have all the time. Is the constraint that we are having? And if I were to stress, honorable members, we're still going to have our opportunity in our respective committees. And I understand that there are so many of these issues which have been bottling up, because this is the first opportunity we're engaging many of us with National Treasury. But there's still going to be other opportunities. We just thought let's get a helicopter view of what was happening from the Minister and the and his team. Can we start, Honorable Vessels? Honorable Vessels, are you there? Please come in.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, just with regards to the loan criteria, I didn't hear an answer with regards to that. I think an honorable member asked the question that banks are distributing that 200 billion currently, and that they can, according to one of the slides, refuse those loans. The question, though, is what are they basing that criteria on? Is it only a credit scoring, or is there any other criteria that are used? Because we have a lot of people that are in good standing and creditworthy, but they are not receiving those debt relief and those loans, especially the SAFT fund. And then the question arises, is there any other criteria? Is there BE criteria used? Is there race-based criteria used? And if so, we must play open cards with regards to that, and tell the public what the criteria is with regards to that. Thank you, Chair. That's my question.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Next.
Thank you, Chair. I hope you can hear me.
I can hear you very well. Thank you.
Great.
Yeah, we can see you.
Chair, I've got three very brief questions. First is, in terms of the 170 billion reprioritization, I know Treasury has just said that they're still working on it, but I'd like to get an idea of what areas have been identified to make cuts to accommodate this. Then, Chair, I'd also like to know with regards to the collapse in revenue that the minister alluded to, that, you know, money's not coming in, but there's pressure to spend, is South Africa at risk of defaulting on its sovereign debt obligations, or is there a possibility of a balance of payment problems in light of the minister's comments? And then lastly, Chair, considering that SAA and SA Express is facing liquidation, will this not trigger a wider debt recall, considering that both these airlines had state-guaranteed debt? Thank you.
Thank you. Next, oral member. I think it was Honorable Okam.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I have been covered mostly. I think just the one thing that we need to say to each other is that there is a huge difference between theory and practice. What we have been discussing here today is a lot of theory, obviously, but that now must be exercised in practice. And the long and the short of it is that the way in which we, well, not we, but the way in which government wants to implement this might create a lot of problems in practice. The fact, for instance, that only farmers that have got a turnover of between 50,000 and 1 million can apply for funding. It's not a practical way of doing this. The biggest amount of work that is created in the farming sector is done by farmers that has got a turnover of more than 1 million rand. They are also in trouble. So if we are not going to help those farmers, we are going to contribute to a high unemployment rate. The same with the BEE requirements that are draconian, that should not be applied in this. There's a lot of businesses that creates jobs for people, poor people, whether they are black or white, it doesn't matter. But a lot of them are black. Most of them are black. And a lot of those businesses are owned by white people or by small companies that does not qualify for funding. And this will create a huge amount of unemployment and a growth in the unemployment figures, which will, in the whole turnaround of things here, will be detrimental to what we are doing here. I think we need to look at how things are going to be applied in practice. We can talk here as much as we like and we can have all the figures, but if the practical application hereof is not going to be seen through, there's going to be a huge lot of troubles. We saw that yesterday evening with the announcements by the Minister Dlamini Zuma with regards to cigarettes. We heard today that the application or the detriment to the government with regards to tax revenue is a huge lot. Mr. Kieswetter said that. And he also said, and we all know that due to the fact that stuff like that happens, the practical implication is that the illegal trade in cigarettes and in liquor is going to go up. Government is not receiving money, therefore. But it just seemed to me that there is a huge difference between what's happening in theory, or what's said in theory, and what must be applied in practice. So I would like this committee to urge government to look into that, so that whatever we do is going to benefit the people from South Africa from a practical point of view. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Marulong.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson. Well, firstly, the loan guarantee scheme is a consequence of the impact of COVID-19. It is actually a direct response to COVID-19. Under normal circumstances, businesses would not have wanted to loan money from banks and elsewhere. They are doing so because of COVID-19, and they are expected to repay these loans with interest, which means that they bear the cost of the COVID-19 pandemic. The only time where the presence of government is evident is when there is default on repayment of those loans. So my question is, are we not able to create a grant funding mechanism for these businesses with strict conditions, also with evidence that they will stimulate economic growth? Two, you know, so far there has been a cash injection on the economy in the form of social grant, which is commendable given the fact that we need to provide a social net for the poor and the vulnerable. However, there's been no evidence that there is an effort on the part of government to invest
pandemics, the stimulation of production beyond
the only time
this phase of COVID-19 pandemic. So this 100 billion which has been set aside for SMEs and job creation, how much of it will guarantee that we are really interested in really stimulating production in the economy? Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Peters. Honorable Peters.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And thanks to the presentation by National Treasury, but also to indicate that my other question has been covered by the Minister's response to the Solidarity Fund. And Chairperson, I just want to indicate that whilst we appreciate and understand the need to prioritize the health budget, especially in view of the challenges the health sector has been having over the years, and they at all times request for additional resources to be able to deal with the infrastructure and other related challenges in the health sector, what about the education sector? Because we now know the challenges that we will be faced in the schools, especially if you have to address the hygiene and sanitation issues, which and the scholar transport, which are not necessarily core to the education sector, but supporting the education sector to make it possible that they can mitigate the challenges of this COVID-19 when the schools reopen. With regard to scholar transport and sanitation and hygiene, you would know the challenges related to social distancing, the washing of hands, availability of soaps and sanitizers, and all those types of indications. But also, Chairperson, I would like to know the intervention in the social security environment, the 350, as well as for the unemployed, as well as the money that will be given for the child support grant in the month of May, as in addition to the carers going forward. Is it the intention of National Treasury to look at reprioritization in the social development department to make it possible that this money can be available for a longer term? Because once the money is ended after 6 months, we know that we will be having the unemployed people still in the same situation, or unemployment having, or the unemployment rate having increased. But also, do we have a database with the Department of Labor of all the unemployed people of South Africa? Because as far as I know, the unemployed people are supposed to have been at all times being registered with the Department of Labor. If not, is it our intention, as well as the Department of Labor's intention, to make sure that we can create that particular register? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Peters. Honorable Mlenzana?
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm also partly covered, particularly by the Minister's input. But just, Chair, on the protection of jobs, there is this 40 billion which is allocated via the current temporary employer or employee relief scheme, which is administered by the UIF for supporting wage payments for businesses which are unable to pay workers. Now, Chair, does this 40 billion include the 30 billion already allocated, or is it an addition to it? Also coupled with that, is the money which is allocated, is it determined at a particular percentage of an employee existing wage? How is the determination made? Yeah, otherwise, Chair, the rest is also, you know, covered. Perhaps if the DG could also cover this, that the Department of Employment and Labor has been working with SARS in helping the UIF around the disbursement of these funds. Now, how is SARS going to assist the department going forward? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Linzana. Honorable Mentor. Parliament out there?
Thank you very much, Chair. Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me, Chair?
Now we can hear you. We're struggling to hear you. Can you proceed and let's see how far we go?
Okay, thank you very much. My point number one is just I'm covered by Mayor Peters, but on education as well and not having it as a prioritization. We are now having Parliament that is operating in its full scope through virtual platform. So we can roll out the same program and the same system for our education from basic to higher education. However, I do not know how Treasury is going to reprioritize budget or and is not talking to how it's going to fund such continuity of schooling. Our children to the forefront of the war. And then number two is on the issue of raising the production. The Minister of Koch does keep on speaking about opening the firms that are dealing with the fabric to make the PPE. So if that fabric is available, why are we not having our textile industry coming back, being having Treasury at the center of it so that we can have the small business people producing our PPEs and stay away from having sole providers that are procuring this much important need of the COVID time from outside, and it's done by big companies that already are questionable in their being. And then lastly, Mr. Dondo, please, DG, explain to us explicitly clear the rapid financing instrument. So if we're not getting the 0% from the IMF, what is the rapid financing instrument given a status of South Africa that we are deeper than the junk status? Thank you very much.
Thank you, honorable members. DG, you've got about 20 minutes, 15 to 20 minutes to try and cover the questions which have been raised. Yeah. Please, can you try and respond to the questions?
Chair, before the DG proceeds, Honorable Somi, please, of SCOPA. Yes, it was on your list, Honorable Somi, before the DG proceeds. Thanks.
Oh. Thank you, Honorable Shango. Please come in. Thanks, Honorable Shango.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I wanted to speak on the area which the DG passed through, which emphasizing the enhancement of thorough preventative controls. As we look into the quantum of the amount committed by government to deal with this as a matter of spending, which is going to be a rapid matter of dealing with this emergency benefit, which is very necessary. But there's a crippling instance which has beginning to be a culture as we look into a number of departments. Right through, there's the permeation of wanting at the edge at times to spend irrespective with less observation of what ought to be done in as far as procurement process are concerned. It might have been that the Auditor General's duty previously has been to look into the books of various departments, various spheres of government after the expenditure. It might be of necessity that we must begin to strengthen the interaction between Treasury, as the DG has indicated, and the Auditor General to ensure that the preventative control measures are somewhat enhanced at the departmental, at a sphere level,
so that we somewhat prevent whatever instances which are going to lead into the seepage of such resources, for us to enhance the value of such allocations for a period beyond the COVID-19, which should be appreciated in a way, so that the country should not necessarily, in a way, could see the loss of such an expenditure, as it is the case on the irregularities which we should talk about when things have happened. So if the DG could somewhat work in a considerate way to ensure that the Auditor General, as of now, the expenditure continues, there is a way that they are somewhat working together to enhance such a value in a very appropriate instance. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, honourable members. Can I allow the DG and the Deputy Minister, because we have got the Deputy Minister there, and Deputy Minister, with your team, can you please respond? I raised the question of racial inequality, and I didn't hear anything. Wrong diagnosis will result in a wrong medication. So let's deal with that. And if I were to stress, it's very central, because a lot of small businesses, black business, youth business, women business, they say they're looking at this 500 billion rand that we are talking about, but they consider themselves to be spectators on that. And I would like the DG, Deputy Minister, to deal with that. Thank you very much, DM.
Chair, if I may, allow the DG to respond first, and then I'll come later.
Thank you so much, DG.
Thank you very much, Chair, for the questions and for this round. We appreciate all of the questions. Just starting at the last point, I think the point is important in that the AG, and we have to talk about preventative measures and put systems in place now. And I think that it's the spirit that we discussed with the AG. And I think all we need to do is to make sure that we're able to extend the value of the money that we'll be putting in terms of these interventions. Now, the question about the rapid financing instrument, as the Minister said, I think it's a facility that's available. There are many, many facilities in the IMF. Some of them have always been there. Some of them are specifically for certain types of countries. And they differ, even within low-income countries, there are some products, call them loan products for now, that are specific for certain types of countries that could have been ravaged by war, etc. And then there are some instruments like this one that is made available, and then obviously we'll have to look at it. It attracts, as Minister said, a 1.1% interest. And then the engagements will start. And I think the point that was made at some point is that we'll obviously have to take everyone in confidence in terms of what we agree or what we are not agreeing before we even sign up on these loans. And I think we are an open country, a democratic country, and we have to open up. I don't think there's going to be any attempt to kind of hide away any type of agreement that we would enter if we are going to go there to finally. So I think that matter, Honourable Mentor, we can always go back to it when the discussions have started and when we know exactly what we'll be doing. And it's important, I think, the whole idea of the procurement regime that we actually are putting forward and are pushing for is all around saying local companies should be given preference. And there's an issue, Chair, which I thought, it will be an issue for some members, but it's not our issue. But I have to mention it because it's in the spirit that you mentioned. It's about the whole issue that has to do with black economic empowerment. I think we move from the premise that as National Treasury, that black economic empowerment is within our laws and legislation. So, and one of the members, I forgot who it was, in the earlier round said, these laws have failed and et cetera. But if they have failed and they are still there, we have to implement. We don't have a choice. And I think it's up to Parliament to actually retract these laws if they're not relevant. but we think they are relevant and remain relevant, and we have to ensure that local empowerment, black empowerment, competitiveness, and all of those relevant issues are actually put to the fore. If it means an opportunity for small businesses to be elevated on simple things like production of masks that will boost the textile industry, let it be, and then let's not be ashamed. And that's unfortunately the approach that we use. But again, we subject obviously to if Parliament would want us to change that view, it's an open issue that can be debated. But I think for now we are doing that, and we are doing a clear conscious of ensuring that small medium enterprises, small companies, local companies that provide local jobs should be. And I know the DTI has been pushing for this in the last couple of weeks in ensuring that the textile industry is boosted, in ensuring that firms that have closed down who can produce these things are brought to the fore. Even support. I know the IDC has made certain interventions by making resources available for some companies to start procuring these things. And I think we should support all of those. And it's something that I think the department at the appropriate time can be called to the relevant committees to come and tell us exactly what they do. There's also an issue about grants. Honorable Peters, I think it's important also to approach this very carefully. In my own little understanding of where we are as a country, I don't think we want South Africa to be a welfare state per se, but what I think it should be a country that can produce jobs and that people can actually have meaningful employment opportunities. But if we are going to have in our thinking, and that's why I think it's something that we did not build into the numbers as we presented them, that these interventions can only be for 6 months. And affordability also was an issue in deciding whether to increase by any amount that we did. Or some people are even calling that we should increase the child support grant by 1,000 rand per month. It wouldn't have been possible with the resources, including even currently the resources that we have put out there. It's still resources that we have to go out and borrow and actually reprioritize. So, and I agree, education is essential, but we should not forget, Chair.
There's honourable member who's mute your mic. The Director General is responding to the question. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I was simply saying education has got existing budgets currently. Infrastructure budgets. It's going to be critical that reprioritization for the next 6 months is critical. If we talk about social distancing, and we know there are instances where there's more than the allowable number of children per class. And the department, obviously, I can imagine they're applying their mind in terms of bringing some of their own infrastructure budgets forward, reprioritizing to a point when they can build extra classrooms or prefabs, whatever you want to call them, in terms of ensuring that social distancing is adhered to, because this pandemic is quite serious. And so when I say, Chair, that these budgets and the revised budgets that's going to be tabled, we're going to expect that we should see some of these innovations that should come through from the departments in terms of what they'll be putting in budgets. So, yeah, the education sector is important. And the 100 billion, all of it should stimulate the economy if we are serious about it. We should use it to stimulate the economy and not spare any cent in terms of making sure that we boost the economy. My colleagues Momoniat and Roy will talk about the loan and the criteria that was set. That day we agreed they'll talk to that. Now, there's also a question. Kepiso, if she's still on the call, I hope she's still, because she was going for another meeting. For SAA and Express, in terms of whether this will trigger a call, maybe she can come in there. It's fact here. I think this is uncharted territory, Chair. This is also something that is occupying our thinking process, that this is all new for everyone. It's new for countries, many countries in the world. It is, most of it, it is going to be theory in terms of, but I think we should take our chances. with the sole purpose of ensuring that we want to protect lives, we want to improve lives, and we want to make sure that we create the necessary environment for where economy can thrive at a later stage. That's kind of the thinking behind some of the things that inform our approach. I will leave it at that, Chair, and then maybe the Deputy Minister can come. But before Deputy Minister, I'll ask maybe it's episode to talk about the triggering of debt if SA Express and SAA are liquidated or we'll ask Roy and Momo to come in insofar as the loan criteria that the banks have set.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Chairpersons. The question that was asked around the revenue collapse and the implication that would have on the ability of the state to service their debt, I think that is a real question. And it suggests that we cannot continue to spend unlimited when we have limited resources. We are already running a primary deficit, which suggests that we are not earning enough money to cover our non-interest expenditure, let alone interest expenditure. So that is a warning sign that suggests that we need to be careful, and we need to be, as we are spending, we need to have in mind the debt sustainability impact at the back of our minds, because failure to that, it means we are relying on lenders for us to continue to service our debt. And the day they decide that they are not going to give us the money, we are certainly going to find ourselves in a very precarious situation. In terms of the SAA and SA Express and them being in the position they are in and the prospect of cross defaults, currently, as it stands, the guarantee agreements are written in such a way that there is no cross default among the state-owned companies. What we have could be a cross default within the entity itself. So SAA defaulting, even in this case, Land Bank defaulting, would not result in other state-owned companies' debt being called, in relation to the default. I think those are the two questions that were posed, DG, to address. I will leave Momo to address the guarantee scheme. Thank you.
Thank you, DG, the team.
In the meantime, sure. I also asked Edward Kiswether to come in and talk about the UIF question.
Chair, so just again, honourable members, in terms of the UIF, just an update, the UIF has not requested SARS to assist with the disbursement of the relief. We've been in discussion with them extensively over the last 2 weeks. Their specific request to us has been if we could help them using our data matching capability to provide them in instances where they have missing information, whether we could provide them with the information that we have on our tax register. We have complied, and we will continue to support them in that regard. And we do so just so that members have the comfort. We do so under the UIF Contributions Act, which allows for the exchange of that information between the Commissioner of SARS and the Commissioner of the UIF. But just to be clear, we have not been asked for any other support from the UIF Commissioner. I thought also while I have the floor, just to give an indication of what's happening in the economy, Chair, we have just released the year-to-date trade results, and you will see there that we have announced a year-to-date trade surplus of 24.8 billion. Now, trade surpluses would ordinarily be good news, except in this case, we are in a trade surplus position because of a decline in imports, which reflects the level of consumption in the domestic economy. and we expect that that trade surplus will increase. And as I said, when it's ordinary to be good news, it actually is a bad indicator of the state of our domestic economy. And then lastly, I thought, again, in support of the information we've already shared and the minister's earlier comment, that year to date, which is actually months to date, we are already just over 13 billion down on revenue, and that's driven mainly by VAT, by excise, by import duties, and by pay as you earn. And I have to indicate that this is likely to get significantly worse once the tax relief measures kicks in, because that then introduces further deferral of some of these payments. So we do anticipate a significant decline in tax revenues, purely driven by the state of the economy as well as the tax relief measures that government has announced.
Momoniat must answer the other question.
Okay, Chair. First, let me just start with some of there were quite a few queries on the tech side about further proposals. At this stage, we don't have any further proposals, but obviously we've been looking at, as we go along and we pick up difficulties that companies or particular households may be experiencing. We've been receiving many requests. So, for example, I didn't go into the detail. So we moved on things like the living annuity. We've put it out for quick comment. The question was asked, why don't we go down to 0%? We invite the honorable member to send his proposal. We'll look at the proposals and then make a decision on such proposals. So we are obviously getting many proposals coming in. The question was asked about salary employees and so on. And to the extent that we can, particularly where people have lost income, we are trying to obviously see how the tax system can assist, because it's a quick way of reaching out to households. Just on the credit guarantee, Roy can provide more details, but generally banks will be funding or providing lending to their own customers. They understand their difficulties and will, over and above the more general criteria that we have, which are quite flexible and kind of are restricted to companies with a turnover of 300 million rand, I don't think that there's any strong criteria beyond just making sure that if companies can be saved, that they are saved through their bank. There is obviously a question of risk between ourselves and the bank. But Roy, do you want to come in?
No, I think you've covered all the issues. It's for companies less than 300 million. And I think, as many of the members highlighted, we didn't, in phase one, we had schemes for much smaller companies, but this will apply to larger companies now. So, and these are sort of the SMEs from a million all the way up to 300 million, which are huge job creators. And so I think it's a very important way of making sure jobs are protected.
Thanks, DM.
No, thanks, Chair. I think I will address one question, Chair, that you raised about inequality. I think we agree with you there that inequality, it is indeed a huge economic constraint for our economy to grow, because if income inequality, which means that income is concentrated in a few section of our society, it means that you are constraining your market size as a country. So if we are to distribute income widely, it will mean that we are also building or increasing our market base, there are certain conditions for the economy to grow, because if there is a widespread of incomes amongst people or South Africans, the demand will basically increase. So we fully agree with you that income inequality does play a key role in constraining the economy. But the second part of the income inequality, we are aware that businesses, they generate income through producing, through selling services. And the businesses, they vary. They are small. There's big businesses. And we fully agree with you that small businesses, which rely, many of them, in selling or providing services to government, if they are not paid on time, they do experience liquidity problems, cash flow problems. And many of them, if they can't get out of cash flow problems, is their immediate entry into insolvency. So we don't want our SMMEs to collapse, and therefore we'll be working with government departments and making sure that they are paid on time. I won't speak about the inequality insofar as the assets are concerned. I think we can take some of these discussions in the next sessions, but also with respective committees, because I'm worried now it's 4 o'clock and you say that we should be done at 4 o'clock. And I think we'll also take further the discussions on structural reforms, because structural reforms are about increasing our production and making sure that businesses, they invest, and they can only invest if the cost of production is lower, if electricity supplied through Eskom is lower, it's available, if transport for them to transport things internally in our country and export, the costs are lower. And we've put together a number of proposals and measures insofar as reducing the cost of doing business in South Africa. Because, Chair, without improving our productive capacity, our economic base for generating revenue, employment, and all that, it won't be realized. And therefore, we fully agree with everyone that we do need to focus on structural reforms. In actual fact, part of the reason why, major reason why we've been downgraded is because we've been very slow in implementing structural reforms, which act as a huge constraint for our economies. So therefore, when we get into the third phase of the economic intervention by government, which is largely about recovery, we'll have to make sure that we pay serious attention on the structural reforms. But like I said, Chair, we thank you so much for the inputs and the guidance from the members, from the honorable members, and we'll further take these discussions in respective committees. Thank you.
Colleagues, are you still there?
I'm here.
Right, I thought the Honorable Chelezi, the main chair for us. Yes, I can. Colleagues, because I think for want of time, we will have to bring it to a close there, but I think National Treasury and its entities are quite clear that this is an ongoing engagement. And the members, of course, through the respective support staffs will be sending through questions and National Treasury providing the responses. I am advised that there's an announcement I must make for the Standing Committee on Finance and the Select Committee that your meeting will be next week on Tuesday the 5th. At 10 o'clock, which is a briefing by National Treasury on their STREP plan. The rest of the committees will be making their own arrangements, of course. And I do want to say to National Treasury from a SCOPA side, we still need to
drill further, I mean, to the issue of the expansions and deviations and the protocols therein. And of course, the fact that reporting and the submission of financial statements, a special dispensation is being made. And we would want to engage on that because part of the problems we've had with SAA arise out of the fact that they've not submitted, and we're trying to avoid a precedence where submission is actually subject to other rules. And so when there is announcements to the extent to which there will be, you know, postponements for submissions, that does not sit well with us, and we want to address that, particularly because the financial year ended on the 31st of March, very much after the effects of what is happening now. So we see no reason and would want to hear a very compelling argument from you as National Treasury about those things. And of course, when we deal with the SAA matter, we would invite you to be there so that we can bring all these matters to a logical conclusion and progressive direction. So colleagues, we are out of time, and I'm going to request that the meeting then stands adjourned, and if there's any other announcements by the co-chairs, if they can make those now, and then we'll bring the meeting to a close. Honorable Maswangani?
No, thanks.
You can proceed and adjourn the meeting.
All right, colleagues, thank you very much, DM, DG, and your teams. And honorable colleagues, thank you very much, and stay safe and stay at home, and all the best with the work that the meeting stands adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. Goodbye.